because it is hard to know where the safe spaces are and who's going to be ready to listen when what you have to say might be hard to digest.
Welcome back for part two of my conversation with Captain Melissa Civils. I'll catch up with you at the end. So we're going to switch gears just a little bit. I would like to know what the biggest challenge that you've been faced with, either in ministry or personally, and how you've come out on the other side, how you've dealt with it, or maybe even share the ongoing process of those things. Because ministry, as we know, it comes with both joys and challenges.
Yeah, so I was trying to think on this, and one of the things that came up for me is that for people that don't know us, my husband and I we're a biracial couple. So he is actually biracial himself, and then we have two little girls who are obviously also biracial, so we're a biracial family. And before we got married in 2013, I think I had a pretty baseline understanding of race and racial issues. And my family, my parents especially, always worked really hard just to instill in us that their main concern for us as we were picking friends or partners or whoever, you know, the company that we keep, was that they were people who treated us well and respected us and loved the Lord. And so it was never a question for me as Kenyon and I were starting to date. Mm-hmm. If that was going to be an issue in my family, it wasn't in his either, other than, you know, his parents, his family is quite biracial as well. So that was always a blessing. I know that's not the case for everybody who enters into a biracial relationship.
Sure.
But after we got married, the Lord really started to open my eyes how much I didn't know. As somebody that grew up in a pretty sheltered environment and a pretty sheltered upbringing. Mm-hmm. As a kid, we grew up in some pretty diverse cities, but nothing super stark. And then when we got married, we moved. Our first appointment was in South Dakota. And that was a little bit of a culture shock for us as well, just because my husband actually grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. He went to college in Ann Arbor, and then his internship was in Bloomington, Indiana. Neither one of us, and I grew up kind of in DHQ towns most of my life, neither one of us had ever lived somewhere super small. And Watertown was 22,000 people, very rural town, and that enough was a culture shock mm-hmm. for us, mm-hmm. especially for my husband. He was coming straight from the training college. So going from Chicago to Watertown was quite an adjustment.
Oh, yeah. Well, even Omaha is a big city.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so oh, yeah, yeah, growing up in that as well.
Yeah, he always jokes about when he was a kid, he thought Omaha was so small and just the worst. And he just wanted to get out and to leave. And now he can see, you know, he'll admit like, oh yeah, Omaha has its benefits. So,
right.
But while we were living in Watertown and then in Mason City is kind of when things started to, it almost felt like explode nationally, some racial mm-hmm. tension things were going on. And as I was kind of like looking these things up, I was even surprised myself, just the amount. In July of 2014, so a year after we moved there, when Eric Gardner was yeah. killed. And then August was Ferguson, was Mike Brown.
Right.
And November was Tamir Rice.
Yep.
So that was a really hard period. And then even in the next couple years, in April of 2015, there was a young man named Freddie Gray that was killed. And then in July of 2016, Philando Castile and Alton Sterling were two men that were killed.
Right.
And during that time period, it was really hard for my husband, especially being a pastor, the CEO, the social service administrator, all the hats that you wear as an officer, and being Black in those spaces in Watertown, especially, was very, very predominantly white. So as he was kind of trying to process through these things and feel the weight of those emotions, he was looking around and there wasn't really a safe space for him mm-hmm. to be able to process those things. Partly, I think, because he felt like we need to be careful with what you say, representing the Salvation Army,
right?
But also just lack of representation. And then the people in our community, whether they were, you know, literally our community people or even the people around us that were our friends, he didn't know if there were people who could relate to what he was feeling in those situations. And there weren't a lot of people who necessarily were reaching out to say, you know, hey, how are you doing with this? I think a lot of those people, they weren't trying to be neglectful or malicious or any of those things. I think people just didn't realize how that stuff that was happening nationally, and they weren't people that he knew personally, but all of those men, young men at the time, were within about 2 or 3 years of his age. So he was watching, you know, not just these men being killed on national TV, but really being able to relate and think like, that could have been me.
Yeah, it hit home for him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very personal in a way that I don't think a lot of people would have thought or realized that it could be. Even, you know, then in, as we moved to Mason City was a little bit more diverse, but not a whole lot. And you had cases like Botham Jean, who was the man who was killed sitting in his apartment, or Tatiana Jefferson, who again was sitting in her home when she was shot. And then, of course, last year with Ahmaud and George Floyd. And as those things happened, I think that people got better at reaching out. I think people got more intentional at realizing how it was affecting him. But I can still remember, we tell people a lot, probably the one before George Floyd, the one that hit the most home for us was probably Philando Castile, who, if people don't remember that story, he was pulled over. It was him and his girlfriend's daughter, and he was pulled over in Minneapolis and was killed. The police officer thought he was reaching for his gun, that he had told him that he had, that he was registered to own. He was shot 4 times and killed. And that one, I remember Kenyon saying to me, you know, Philando, he had done all the right things. You know, he wasn't trying to be combative. He was trying to inform the officer of what he was doing. He wasn't fighting back. And still, he gets killed. Kenyon just said to me, like, I haven't related as much with some of the others because I just, like, I know that wouldn't be me, but I have gotten pulled over before. I could get pulled over again.
Yeah.
And what would happen if I flinch or I move in a way that they think I'm reaching for something? And I think it was that next day, it was during the summer, and I think the next day Kenyon had to drive to camp to get kids. And I just remember both of us just weeping and thinking, like, oh my gosh, like, don't let him get pulled over tomorrow. Yeah.
Like, what a reality that that would be a possibility.
So real. And, you know, the stretch of just interstate between South Dakota and Nebraska, between our core and our camp, you know, there are miles and miles and miles where there's just nothing. And that being so real, or even thinking about Kenyon's younger brothers are both athletic. One of them, well, they're both wrestlers. They're both football players. And so, you know, on site, they would probably seem intimidating to some people. But just knowing that they would never hurt anybody, like, just the kindest, most gentle people.
Right.
But knowing that somebody in authority could look at them and see them as a threat. And so that was a really hard, dark time. And I think George Floyd brought up a lot of those same emotions. For him, certainly, we were in Mason City. We're even closer to Minneapolis. We're about 2 hours away. So it was literally hitting very close to home at that point. And I really, as Kenyon was trying to work through that, there's a lot of people who didn't reach out that I think he was expecting to. And again, I don't think that people did that to be cruel. I just don't think that people knew what to say.
Sure.
I think I know something that you and Peggy were talking about in her interview was that we get so scared of saying the wrong thing. when we are watching our friends go through any type of suffering. We don't want to be the person that misspeaks. We don't want to be the person that says the wrong thing. And I think it's important to know that it's okay if we say the wrong thing. It's okay. I know, at least for my husband, something that he has told people is that, you know, just say, I don't know what to say.
Right.
Like, I have no words to give you right now. I don't know what would be a comfort, but I'm sorry and I love you. And, you know, do you want to talk?
Right. Just like you said, like creating that safe space for
yes,
him.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and to let people know I'm safe. I'm a safe person for you to talk
yes.
to. I want you to know that.
Yes, because it is hard to know where the safe spaces are and who's going to be ready to listen when what you have to say might be hard to digest.
Yeah.
I have a friend who mentioned sometimes she gets intimidated because she just knows that people are carrying so much grief in those moments. And sometimes grief manifests in people lashing out when you try to reach out to them.
Yep.
So I don't want to discount that for people because I've felt that also. We have to know that we can reach out to someone and it's okay if they don't respond to us.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's okay if they give us a really surface answer, because even if we're willing to be a safe space, we might not have that connection with them that they have with somebody else, or we might not know them on that level. I know there are people when they have reached out to Kenyon that he will go really deep with and really specific. And there are people that he might just say, you know, I'm not doing well, but thank you for thinking of me. And I would really appreciate your prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for us to get comfortable with uncomfortable conversations is really, really important as people who are trying to understand and trying to come alongside.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
In those moments where we've struggled, the things that have really helped us are those people who have been safe spaces. But then honestly, also, so George Floyd happened and we had just had a baby. And a friend of ours said, you know, I think it would be really beneficial for you guys in your transition to seek a counselor and I can recommend somebody to you. And they did. And that has been really, really life-giving for us.
Oh, yeah.
To find that even like third party, somebody that is, you know, by profession, they have to be removed from the situation. They don't know us personally, so they're not just going to give whatever answer
right.
that you want to hear. To have that outside party be able to speak life and comfort and reassurance in the times that you need it has been really good as well.
Yeah. I love that you are saying the names, that you recalled the people.
Yeah.
Let's say them again. Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, Freddie Gray, Mike Brown, John Crawford, Tamir Rice, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor.
Yeah.
It's really important for us to not stop talking about this. And I know you mentioned the podcast that I did with Peggy McGee, which was back in the fall. That was the time. It was hot. It was a hot topic. And
yeah.
we were talking about it.
Yeah.
But things kind of died off. And we stopped really focusing on it. But really, we need to keep mentioning the names. And we need to keep
sure.
talking about this. It's so important. It's so important. It's part of the season that we're in, and I don't ever want to stop talking about it. I want people to know that if they still need a space to vent
right.
or to mourn or weep or lash out even, that I'm a safe person
yeah.
to do that with. Even if I don't have all the words to say, I can be there for them. So thank you so much for bringing this back
yeah.
up. What do you follow on social media?
So as I was looking and starting to do some work myself about social justice, really when George Floyd was killed, I realized even in that time, I still had so much more work to do in myself.
Mm.
So I made a really intentional choice to start following more people of color on social media, and specifically people of color who are Christians. And some people that I started to follow were Bernice King, who's actually Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter. she always has some really good things to say about her dad and his legacy, but also just faith.
Mm-hmm.
Amina Brown Owen is another mm-hmm. one that people might know. Joe Saxton, Austin Channing Brown, Natasha Morrison. Those are probably some of the ones that I follow quite a bit. And they just teach me so much. Even, you know, it's people kind of talk about the negatives of social media, but even knowing them from a distance, how much they teach me about faith and womanhood and race and justice in ways that are so graceful and loving, I think has been really impactful.
Right.
And then some others that I love to learn from kind of in that vein. Jamar Tisby, I know that his name is pretty popular right now. Eugene Cho, Ed Stetzer, Beth Moore. Those are a few people that just really consistently, I think, are able to speak some hard truths, but they do it with so much grace and mm-hmm. so much love and encouragement that it's been a good thing for me to try to follow in that yeah. vein.
Yeah. And you mentioned about, you know, even following them from a distance. I know yeah. some of these people, you may never cross paths with them. They may never even know who you are.
Sure.
They just get a notification that you're following them.
Right.
But the more that we surround ourselves with people who challenge us and people who can make us better humans, yeah. you know, better Christians, yeah. the more natural it's just going to be for us.
Sure.
When it comes to acceptance or standing up for what's right, standing in the gap for people, it's just yeah. going to become a natural thing the more we're surrounded by it and the more it's poured into us.
Sure.
The more it'll just be part of our daily life. So, Melissa, it's been a joy to talk to you, honestly. I feel like we've reconnected in a different way.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking time. I know how busy you are, how busy your schedule is. We just appreciate you taking a moment for us today. I know our listeners are going to be inspired by what you had to say. We'll share some of our website information so that you can connect with either with Melissa or with on our website with the MOPS program. But we thank you for your time today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you for letting me come on and talk about this stuff. I really appreciate it.
What a privilege it's been talking with Captain Melissa. I'm so grateful for both of the topics we've discussed in this two-part series, both motherhood and racial and social justice. Friends, you've heard the names of individuals who lost their lives to violence, and unfortunately, the list keeps growing. And even since I recorded this podcast with Melissa, more people have been added to the list. Now, please hear me. This is not a political platform or propaganda. However, I'm convinced that regardless of the reasons or details surrounding these deaths, God weeps for each of them. And we need to pray for hearts that break, for the things that break our Father's heart. We serve a God of love and reconciliation, of justice and mercy. I pray for myself that He would soften my heart and give me eyes to see those around me who are hurting, whatever the reason, and for opportunities to reach out and the words to say or not say, but just to be there and listen and support, and to pray for change. I hope that something in this podcast has touched your heart today or at least moved you to pray. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider subscribing and tell your friends. You can learn more about the Salvation Army and our ministry to women on our website, which is uscwomensministries.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Central Women. I just want to circle back around and remind everyone about our Salvation Army and MOPS partnership. And if you go to the website, again, uscwomensministries.com, right on our homepage, you'll find a link that'll tell you all about this partnership. We are trying to get the word out as much as possible. MOPS is a great Christian organization, and we are so excited to support them and partner with them. Thanks for listening. Again, this podcast is a production of the Salvation Army Central Territory Women's Ministries Department. I hope this podcast has left you feeling prepared and equipped for tomorrow. I'll see you next time.